brought to you by the Cannabis Bee Network.
Here is the Cannabis Entrepreneur Show with your host, Scott Jacobs.
Hello, listeners. How's it going today? This is the Cannabis Entrepreneur Clips 002, audio clips from YouTube. Let's check out clip number one. Medical pot. Will Colorado's Green Rush last?
Twenty states have now legalized the medical use of marijuana for the treatment of things like glaucoma, the effects of chemotherapy, and chronic pain, defying federal laws that still consider marijuana more dangerous than cocaine and methamphetamine. In November, voters in two states, Washington and Colorado, went so far as to approve marijuana for recreational use, too. And as we first reported before that vote, if you want to know what legalized marijuana might look like, the place to go is Colorado, which has the most developed medical marijuana industry in the country.
The story will continue in a moment.
In Denver, if you want to find a medical marijuana dispensary, just look for the Green Cross. You won't have to go far. There are 204 of them in the Mile High City. That's roughly three times the number of Starbucks and McDonald's combined. They come in all sizes and shapes. There is the health food store motif and 70s-style head shops. There are storefronts pitching low-cost weed and boutiques offering gourmet ganja. No stems and seeds here, just walnut-sized buds freshly harvested from the cultivation room out back.
When patients arrive, this is where they'll have to show their patient registry card and their driver's license to gain access to the actual marijuana center itself.
You can smell it.
This is all private enterprise, licensed, regulated, and taxed by the state. It was enshrined in the Colorado Constitution after voters approved an amendment allowing the sale of marijuana to people who can demonstrate that they may benefit from its avowed medicinal properties. Matt Cook, a former narcotics officer, wrote the law and served as the state's first director of enforcement.
If you'll note, video security cameras in the system.
And the reason for that?
There is. We created a very transparent regulatory scheme. And wanted to ensure that what they said they were doing, they were actually doing. 170 plants.
No state has gone to the lengths to manage medical marijuana that Colorado has. Every licensed dispensary must grow at least 70% of its own product indoors, so harvesting and sales can be closely monitored. This crop is worth about $250,000.
We track everything from seed to sale, and they have to account for 100% of it. We've got a gentleman here that has a live, if you will, software program that does all of the tracking for this commodity.
Each plant has a barcode and is registered to a specific patient. Most dispensaries will cultivate a couple of dozen different strains, some of them proprietary, like ales at a microbrewery, engineered to have particular characteristics, as our bud tender, Carrie, explained.
This is called Jack Frost, but it's a AAA, alert, awake, and aware. If you needed to medicate in the AM before going to work, no one would ever be able to detect that you took any medicine, just as you would any other medicines that you take. So no physical lethargy is my point.
We should point out that those properties are anecdotal and not based on studies by either the FDA or the DEA, a subject we will get to shortly. There is also no correlation between the more popular brand names and the ailments they alleviate. Dopium is a medication available at Denver Relief, owned by Ian Seed. It's gotten high marks from critics. Yes, there are medical marijuana critics in Colorado, even competitions.
You won the Colorado Medical Marijuana Harvest Cup?
We did.
A couple of years ago?
Yeah, in 2009. And our biodiesel won 5 out of the 6 categories in first place. So we won the overall award. It was a sweeping victory, if you will.
And biodiesel?
That's
the name of it?
Yes, it is.
And does it sound like medicine?
There's a lot of strains out there that don't sound like medicine because this didn't used to be legal. And those strain names have not changed. You know, strains back in the 70s, you know, there was Afghani, and we still have AK-47 that came from the Hindu Kush region of Afghanistan originally.
But it's not all brand loyalty and nostalgia. There are lots of new things on the dispensary shelf, especially for non-smokers. They're called edibles, the marriage of botanical science and the culinary arts. Marijuana-infused cookies, candy, chocolate truffles, even olive oil. And for patients watching their waistline, there are marijuana pills that come in different strengths, just like Tylenol and Advil.
You simply take it with a glass of water, and it puts you where you need to be.
The people who have invested money in all of this are known locally as ganjapreneurs. Colorado has had a history of gold rushes and silver rushes, and some people have dubbed this the Green Rush, not just for the color of medical marijuana, but for the money that might eventually be made here if you're among the first to stake a claim. Christy Kelly was doing marketing in Washington when she decided to invest in a medical marijuana dispensary.
There's not a lot of opportunities in any one lifetime where you can be a part of something from such an early stage. And so ultimately my partners begged me to come out, and my husband and I packed up our bags and shut down our life in D.C. and moved out here.
The company's evolution has been fairly dynamic.
Trip Kieber is CEO of Dixie Elixirs, the leading manufacturer of cannabis-laced edibles. It supplies most of the state's 537 dispensaries from this factory, which he calls state-of-the-art for the industry, which means small scale.
So here we have Lexi, who is one of our production specialists. She's preparing our medicated chocolate rolls, which are certainly one of our most popular edibles products.
It smells really good. It looks good.
Dixie Elixir product line includes ice creams and medicated beverages that come in 10 different flavors.
We have a 75 milligram, 12 ounce sparkling red currant. Would be the equivalent of 4 or 5 doses of medicine for a patient.
What would happen to me if I drank one of these?
You would have a very long but mellow afternoon.
Kieber and his partners have poured $1 million into this business and have also pioneered edible products in capsules they say contain all the medicinal benefits of marijuana, but without the high.
What's your business plan?
So our plan, and I'm having...
Long-term and short-term.
Sure. The long-term plan for this business, for Dixie Elixirs and Edibles, as I've never been really shy to share, is ultimately to sell it. I truly believe that whether it's big alcohol, big tobacco, or big pharma, a company like one of those is going to look very, very closely at medical cannabis. It's about a $2 billion market in 2012, growing to just under $9 billion in 2016. So you're seeing hockey stick growth, and I think companies like Dixie are well positioned to be acquired as the industry develops.
It's a risky proposition. The industry requires a big capital investment, and the medical marijuana marketplace is already saturated. But Matt Cook, who wrote the rule book for all of this and is now a consultant to the medical marijuana industry, says it's helped pull Denver out of the recession, occupying once vacant retail and industrial space, providing thousands of jobs and new revenue for the state of Colorado.
What's the economic impact been?
It's huge. There's over 1 million square feet of leased space mm-hmm. in the Denver area. Look at all the electrical contractors. The HVAC contractors, a number of ancillary businesses, it's huge. Tax revenues exceeded, I believe the last number I heard was in excess of $20 million.
In spite of all the euphoria, there is a cloud hanging over the cannabis industry in Colorado, and it's not marijuana smoke. It's the Federal Controlled Substances Act, which still lists marijuana as a Schedule I drug, every bit as dangerous as heroin, with no medical benefit. And the Justice Department is not happy with the wide-scale commercialization of Colorado cannabis. Sam Kamen is a law professor at the University of Denver and one of the reigning experts on the subject.
In Colorado, you can grow it if you're licensed, and you can sell it if you're licensed to people who have a card to buy it.
Yes, but...
And all of those people are violating federal law.
Exactly. And that's the really strange thing, is that we have this, you know, sort of hundreds of dispensaries servicing as many as 100,000 people, and every transaction that occurs is a federal crime, and all the manufacturing of the product, from the growing of it to the making of the products and everything else, all of those are serious federal crimes, too.
Even though the state of Colorado has passed a constitutional amendment allowing it.
Exactly. Exactly. Right? The federal government sees it as a serious crime. They say, we know that California and 16 other states, the District of Columbia, we know you guys think it's medicine. It's not. We hear that you want to legalize it. You can't. We can't make you undo your statutes, but we can sure come in and prosecute your citizens that are violating federal law.
But they haven't.
But they haven't.
And there's a reason for that. Some might call it the triumph of the marketplace. The federal government doesn't have enough manpower to shut down the medical marijuana business in Colorado or prosecute all the purveyors and patients, and the voters don't want it. Boulder County District Attorney Stan Garnett says it's virtually impossible to impanel a jury on a marijuana case here, let alone get a conviction.
But what we deal with is what prosecutors call jury nullification, where juries say, I know what the law is, but I'm not going to follow it. This community has made it very clear that criminal enforcement of marijuana is not something they want me to spend any time on.
Is it really an issue here?
It's really not an issue.
And that is more or less the position of the Justice Department in Washington. Deputy Attorney General James Cole has told U.S. attorneys not to waste resources prosecuting patients or caregivers that are in clear compliance with state medical marijuana laws.
Our focus is really on keeping it away from children. Our focus is keeping it out of the hands of organized crime. Our focus is making sure that people aren't through marijuana dispensaries using it as a pretext to do large-scale interstate drug dealing. These are the areas where we're really trying to focus.
So the message is, if you're licensed in the state of Colorado and you follow the law, then you should be okay.
Each case is going to rise and fall on its own unique facts. Any of that is still in violation of the Controlled Substance Act, of the federal law. We're not interested in bothering people who are sick and are using it in the recommendation of a doctor. We are concerned with people who are using it as a pretext to become large-scale drug dealers.
Sounds like the federal government is tolerating it.
It is tolerating it, and at the same time is below the surface trying to make it very difficult for these folks. It's doing it through banking regulations. If you talk to dispensary owners, one of the things that they will lament is no one will do business with us.
The Justice Department has let it be known that if financial institutions do business with medical marijuana centers, they could be at risk for civil or criminal prosecution under the Controlled Substances Act or federal money laundering statutes. It's made it difficult, if not impossible, for dispensaries to get loans, open company bank accounts, or process patients' credit cards.
It can't stay like this. Either we have to have settled expectations that this is a federal crime, the federal government's not going to tolerate it, or the federal government is going to let states like Colorado regulate it, tax it, experiment with it. To have it exist in both worlds simultaneously is unsustainable. We can't have a multi-million-dollar industry built on criminal conduct.
Just a few weeks ago, the federal government announced that it would allow Colorado to live in its own little world. After the state's voters defied federal law and approved the recreational use of marijuana last November, the Justice Department finally said it would not sue to stop it, nor will it make enforcing marijuana laws a priority in states that legalize and regulate it. Recreational sales in Colorado are scheduled to begin January 1st, 2014.
Go to 60MinutesOvertime.com for more on medical marijuana. And a conversation with John Miller about his interview with The Briefer.
Clip number 2. Potrepreneurs, would-be marijuana industry startups pitch to investors.
Just think about this, a handheld portable pot vaporizer or a dispensing machine that can hold 55 types of marijuana, all created, sold, and purchased legally. These are just some of the ideas being pitched today in New York City at an angel investors meeting. Mom, I don't own any of them. The pot business is just waiting to get tapped. According to Medical Marijuana Business Daily, yes, a real publication, lawful cannabis sales in the U.S. will total over $1.5 billion this year alone. And our next guest was inspired by the recent marijuana legislation legalization in Colorado and Washington to join together investors and potrepreneurs, love that word, to pioneer a brand new industry. In the guest spot today, a marijuana activist for 40 years, Steve D'Angelo, co-founder of the ArcView Angel Network to jumpstart legitimate marijuana businesses. Steve, welcome. What are some of the more interesting and innovative products that you've seen?
Well, we've seen all sorts of things, from handheld portable vaporizers to lights that are, you can dial in the spectrum of the light and grow cannabis more efficiently, to new formulas and ways of making beverages and other products out of some of the elements that are in cannabis.
Sounds very cool. But do you think that we're going to see legalization, decriminalization of marijuana within my lifetime, within your lifetime?
Well, I think for certain we are going to see complete legalization of cannabis well within my lifetime, probably much sooner than most of your viewers expect.
Really? Mm.
Yeah, I think that this change is going to come from the state level, as it already has. We have about 18 states already that have passed some form of cannabis law reform. It's not going to be long before we have a majority of states.
Well, we've been talking about the ganja. I want to talk about the cash money angle here of the ganja situation. Pretty interesting that you're looking at these kind of serious investors. What I understand from reading up on this is some of them are going to care most not about some of these issues about the drug war and disparities, which a lot of us care about, but actually getting their money back. How do you pitch to investors in a space where they may see more uncertainty than other financial markets?
Well, we pitch to investors much the same way you would in any investment environment, except you have the added overlay of a lot of concern with legal and regulatory issues that need to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, do you have, for example, a way to quantify that? Do you say, if you look at these couple states, we're not going backwards, the polling or I don't know what other metrics show that they don't need to worry about maybe legislatures taking this power back?
Well, the ArcView Group, which is the company that I started to introduce investors to opportunities mm-hmm. in the cannabis space, focuses exclusively on opportunities that are legal under federal law, mm-hmm. i.e. the picks and the shovels, rather than the cannabis itself.
Ah, okay.
Well, in addition to this very cool picture, and I'm so excited that you came today looking just like it, I also just want to know, do you have a favorite pitch? Is there a certain type of item that you all have under your company that is your favorite company or item to pitch to investors?
Well, I wouldn't say that there's a particular company, but the kind of ideas that we like the most are ones that are really going to professionalize the cannabis industry and help it move into the mainstream of American life.
Hmm. Do you have a sense of why this nation looks at marijuana as if it were almost the same as cocaine rather than almost the same as wine or alcohol?
Well, you know, we have had many, many years of misinformation and outright lies being told about this plant.
Yes.
I prefer a comparison to pharmaceuticals, actually, rather sure. than wine and alcohol, because cannabis is a natural, healthy alternative to many of the more dangerous pharmaceuticals we see advertised every night on
right.
TV channels.
Right.
Now, you use that word mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
That comes up a lot in politics. A lot of people who care about marriage equality try to think about how to take something that some people view as somehow over here on the fringe and say, no, this is mainstream. This is just like you. How does that work in the business context? I mean, is there a way that you try to make this relatable even to people who have no interest in necessarily using the product themselves?
Well, you know, I think the key is to shift the perception of cannabis from being something that's a harm that could be tolerated without too much damage to society to really showing people that it could be a positive benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And so we explained that cannabis law reform not only is a great financial opportunity, but has a bunch of other great benefits, like it will allow law enforcement to free up resources to focus on truly violent crime. It will allow us to use the industrial potential of the hemp plant, which is a great eco-friendly raw material that Canadian farmers are making millions off of and U.S. farmers are prohibited from growing. It will allow us to take billions and billions of dollars away from the cartels and the street gangs that are currently controlling the trade.
To say nothing of the unleashed human potential of not criminalizing people for nonviolent personal health behavior. Steve D'Angelo, thank you very much.
Clip number 3, a random clip from Drugs, Inc.
But when it comes to the city's most popular drug, marijuana, Washington State has taken a typically liberal approach, and business is booming. At the world-famous Cannabis Farmers Market, Seattle residents line up to buy medical marijuana. These patients have ID cards and papers, allowing them to buy cannabis for health issues ranging from back pain to insomnia.
This paper right here means that I can go into that building and buy a pound and a half of marijuana for my personal use. And that's about $3,000-$4,000 on street value.
This market is run by Kitty and her husband, Jeremy.
I call it Disneyland for cannabis. Throughout generations, farmers markets have been people displaying their excess crops, and those crops have been vegetables and fruits. But to us, the farmers markets is the excess crops of medicine, and that medicine is marijuana. Just like at a farmer's market, you can pick up a tomato and look at it and smell it.
Yeah.
See if you like it. You can do the same here. They'll let you.
Some vendors will let you sample it. You know what I mean?
So.
We are the largest medical marijuana farmer's market in the world.
We're the largest one in the world. We see anywhere from 1,000 patients to 2,000 patients.
For a $250 entrance fee, a vendor can sell up to 28 ounces of marijuana.
Yeah. Jeremy, you got the best farmer's market in the world. You already know that.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much.
There's 58 vendors vying for all these patients' attention. And they have anywhere from cupcakes and treats to plants on their table. So they're all bringing their A game.
Blueberry Kush is my strongest strain. It's $12 a gram right now. Bubble Hash, that's $15 a gram.
Says it in the name. Sweet Island Skunk, 25 and 8.
We got the best products out there on the market. It's actually one stick of butter. I've got the chili cheese crackers here.
That's cool.
Very unique strain.
I love it. Would you mind if we tried a little bit of it?
Yeah. This is 40 and 8. This is the rich man's eye. So you got to pay the cost to be the boss.
The cane helps me for my bad back, and what's inside the cane helps me even more.
The pot business is changing. Soon residents won't need a medical marijuana card. In 2012, Seattle's tolerant approach to drugs was given a huge boost when the state of Washington voted to legalize the recreational use of cannabis. Many of Seattle's mom-and-pop medical cannabis growers fear that the legalization of marijuana will have an adverse effect on their business.
I think that legalization, we're not ready for it. I don't think that we're ready for them to come in and corporatize
something like that.
Cannabis. It's going to make money for the large corporations, and people suffer, and corporations get rich.
I've been referred to as the Bill Gates of bud. I'm jumping into what is effectively a $100 billion to $200 billion vacuum and building a giant brand out of it.
While the city decides the rules of sale, Seattle's corporations are circling, looking to enter the marijuana market. Jamin Shively worked as a Microsoft strategy manager for 6 years. Using his business expertise, he plans to create the world's first mass market cannabis company.
I've envisioned the evolution of cannabis out of a black market to a completely first-class premium quality product, which is treated with the same degree of respect as a premium cognac, a fine cigar.
Got that nice red spectrum for the flower?
Yeah, these are beautiful crowns, and you can see the crystals even on the undersides of the leaves. Oh my goodness, these are just gorgeous. We are going to be commissioning 700 grow rooms of this size in order to produce 2,000 pounds per month of product, which equates to $20 million per month of retail sales just in the state of Washington.
Jamin sees corporate cannabis as the next big thing in Seattle's long history at the cutting edge of new business in America.
Seattle is an amazing place for innovation, the entrepreneurial spirit, creating new products and perfecting them over time. Over 50% of the most creative, intelligent, and productive professionals who I know use cannabis. The whole idea to create my business came after taking a couple of puffs of some really amazing cannabis.
He believes the marijuana industry will help solve America's economic crisis.
From a financial standpoint, there are multiple benefits. Not only will entrepreneurs such as myself be making a fortune on this, we'll create jobs for tens of thousands, eventually hundreds of thousands of Americans. The government will be saving money. They won't have to go around spending billions of dollars, arresting over 800,000 people per year, incarcerating over 80,000 people for possession of cannabis. And they'll be raking in tens of billions of dollars per year in tax revenue. So there's benefits all across the board. I taste success. I taste freedom. I taste creativity. I taste the future of America and the world.
All right, listeners, that's all I have for this week. Until next week, have a good day, good night, good week. Bye-bye.